Welcome to Enabled, the weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. The program is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, your host for Enabled. Thank you for joining me. Today's program will have information on an array of retinal diseases. Now, I know you're probably familiar with some of the more common retinal diseases like macular degeneration and even retinal detachments, so you won't hear a lot about those two in this program. Instead, I will bring you information about two much less common retinal diseases, diabetic retinopathy and choroideremia. I will start with diabetic retinopathy, with information from the American Optometric Association. Their article begins by saying, diabetic retinopathy is a condition that may occur in people who have diabetes. It causes progressive damage to the retina, which is the light-sensitive lining at the back of the eye. Diabetic retinopathy is a serious sight-threatening complication of diabetes. Diabetes interferes with the body's ability to use and store sugar or glucose. The disease is characterized by too much sugar in the blood, which can cause damage throughout the body, including the eyes. Over time, diabetes damages small blood vessels and throughout the body, including in the retina. Diabetic retinopathy occurs when these tiny blood vessels leak blood and other fluids. This causes the retinal tissue to swell, resulting in cloudy or blurred vision. The condition usually affects both eyes. Now, the longer a person has diabetes, the more likely they will develop diabetic retinopathy. And if left untreated, diabetic retinopathy can cause blindness. So we have some symptoms of diabetic retinopathy, and they will include the following four things. If you see spots or floaters, if you have blurred vision, if you notice that you have a dark or an empty spot in the center of your vision, or if you're having difficulty seeing well at night. When people with diabetes experience long periods of high blood sugar, fluid can accumulate in the lens inside the eye that controls focusing. This changes the curvature of the lens, leading to changes in the vision. However, once blood sugar levels are controlled, usually the lens will return to its original shape and vision will improve. Patients with diabetes who can better control their blood sugar levels will slow the onset and progression of diabetic retinopathy. According to a 2018 American IQ survey, and this is not IQ like your intellectual ability, it's spelled American EYEQ survey. This was conducted by the AOA, which is the American Optometric Association. According to this survey, nearly half of Americans did not know whether diabetic eye diseases have visible symptoms, and often the early stages of diabetic retinopathy does not. That same survey found that more than one-third of Americans didn't know that a comprehensive eye exam is the only way to determine if a person's diabetes will cause blindness, which is why the AOA recommends that everyone with diabetes have a comprehensive dilated eye examination at least once a year. If you have diabetes, at least once a year. Early detection and treatment can limit the potential for significant vision loss from diabetic retinopathy. Treatment of diabetic retinopathy varies depending on the extent of the disease. People with diabetic retinopathy may need laser surgery to seal those leaking blood vessels or to discourage other blood vessels from leaking. Your doctor might need to inject medications into the eye to decrease inflammation or stop the formation of new blood vessels. People with advanced cases of diabetic retinopathy might need a surgical procedure to remove and replace the gel-like fluid in the back of the eye. This is called the vitreous. Surgery may also be needed to repair a retinal detachment. This is when there's a separation of the light-receiving lining in the back of the eye. If you are diabetic, you can help prevent or slow the development of diabetic retinopathy by doing the following five things: by taking your prescribed medication, by sticking to your diet, by exercising regularly. You can also help prevent or slow the development by controlling your high blood pressure and by avoiding alcohol and smoking. So let's go back to some more detail. What causes diabetic retinopathy? Diabetic retinopathy results from the damage that diabetes causes to the small blood vessels located in the retina. These damaged blood vessels can cause vision loss in two different ways. The first way is fluid can leak into the macula, the area of the retina responsible for clear central vision. Although small, the macula is the part of the retina that allows us to see colors and very fine details. The leaking fluid causes the macula to swell, and this results in blurred vision. That's one way that a damaged blood vessel could cause vision loss. Another way, in an attempt to improve blood circulation in the retina, new blood vessels may form on the surface of the retina. These fragile, abnormal blood vessels can leak blood into the back of the eye and block your vision. Next, we have a comment that diabetic retinopathy is classified into two types or two stages. I'll tell you what they are first, and then we'll go back and do each one separately. The two types of diabetic retinopathy. The first one is called non-proliferative diabetic retinopathy. Non-proliferative. The second one is proliferative diabetic retinopathy. So back to that first one, the two types. The first type, non-proliferative diabetic retinopathy. This is abbreviated NPDR, and this is the early stage of the disease in which symptoms will be mild or even non-existent. In NPDR, that's non-proliferative diabetic retinopathy, the blood vessels in the retina are weakened. Tiny bulges in the blood vessels called microaneurysms. These little blood vessels may leak fluid into the retina, and this leakage may lead to swelling of the macula. And the other type of diabetic retinopathy is proliferative diabetic retinopathy. That is abbreviated PDR, proliferative diabetic retinopathy. This is the more advanced form of the disease. At this stage, circulation problems deprive the retina of oxygen. As a result, new fragile blood vessels can begin to grow in the retina and into the vitreous, the gel-like fluid that fills the back of the eye. The new blood vessels may leak blood into the vitreous, clouding the vision. Other complications of PDR, proliferative, diabetic retinopathy, other complications include detachment of the retina due to scar tissue formation and the development or the development of glaucoma. Glaucoma is an eye disease in which there is progressive damage to the optic nerve. In PDR, new blood vessels grow into the area of the eye that drains fluid from the eye. This greatly raises eye pressure, which damages the optic nerve. If left untreated, PDR can cause severe vision loss and even blindness. Now we have the two types. Once again, they're non-proliferative diabetic retinopathy and the second stage, the more serious stage, proliferative diabetic retinopathy. Now we'll come to some risk factors for diabetic retinopathy. There'll be four of them listed for you. First of all, obviously, don't even need to say it, the big risk factor is if you have diabetes. People with type 1 or type 2 diabetes are at risk for developing diabetic retinopathy. The longer a person has diabetes, the more likely he or she is to develop diabetic retinopathy, particularly if the diabetes is poorly controlled. The second risk factor is your race. Hispanics and African Americans are at greater risk for developing diabetic retinopathy. The third risk factor are medical conditions that you might have. People with other medical conditions, such as high blood pressure and high cholesterol, are at greater risk for developing diabetic retinopathy. And the final risk factor is pregnancy. Pregnant women face a higher risk for developing diabetes and diabetic retinopathy. If a woman develops gestational diabetes, she also has a higher risk of developing diabetes as she ages. The next section, again, this information is coming from the American Optometric Association. How is diabetic retinopathy diagnosed? Diabetic retinopathy can be diagnosed through a comprehensive eye examination. Testing, with emphasis on evaluating the retina and the macula, may include the following five things. First of all, a patient history. This will determine vision difficulties, presence of diabetes, and other general health concerns that may be affecting vision. Another part of this comprehensive eye examination will be a visual acuity measurement to determine how much central vision has been affected. The third part of diagnosis, refraction, to determine if new eyeglass prescription is needed. The fourth, evaluation of the ocular structures, including an evaluation of the retina by looking through a dilated pupil. And the fifth part of a comprehensive eye exam should be measurement of the pressure within the eye. In addition to those basic tests that you'll have, you also might be subjected to some supplemental testing. You could be experiencing retinal photography, or it's also called tomography. This will document the current status of your retina. You might also be asked to have a fluorescein angiography test. This will evaluate any abnormal blood vessel growth. So now we have the question, how is diabetic retinopathy treated? We mentioned this briefly in the beginning. More details here. Laser treatment, which is also called photocoagulation. Laser treatment is used to stop the leakage of blood and fluid into the retina. In this test, a laser beam of light can be used to create small burns in areas of the retina that has abnormal blood vessels. This will be trying to seal the leaks with a laser beam of light. Treatment for diabetic retinopathy depends on the stage of the disease. The goal of any treatment is to slow or stop the progression of the disease. In the early stages of that first stage, non-proliferative diabetic retinopathy, regular monitoring may be the only treatment. Following your doctor's advice for diet and exercise and controlling blood sugar levels can help control the progression of the disease. Injections of medication in the eye are aimed at discouraging the formation of abnormal blood vessels, and this may help slow down the damaging effects of diabetic retinopathy. If the disease advances, the abnormal blood vessels can leak blood and other fluid into the retina. This will lead to macular edema. Laser treatment, and once again that word is photocoagulation, referring to laser treatment. This kind of treatment, photocoagulation, can stop this leakage. A laser beam of light creates small burns in areas of the retina that have abnormal blood vessels to try to seal those leaks. Widespread blood vessel growth in the retina, which occurs in proliferative diabetic retinopathy, can be treated by creating a pattern of scattered laser burns across the retina. This causes abnormal blood vessels to shrink and disappear. With this procedure, some side vision may be lost in order to safeguard your central vision. That's diabetic retinopathy from the American Optometric Association. Their website is www.aoa.org. Next, before I start this article, here's a heads up for you. June 24th to 27th of this coming year, the International Conference of the Choroideremia Research Foundation will take place in Rochester, New York, where this program originates. The conference, again, is held June 24th to the 27th this coming year. So I looked up some information about that disease. This comes from good old Wikipedia. Choroideremia is abbreviated CHM. Thank goodness they abbreviate it. Let me spell that for you. Choroideremia. 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 CHM. Let's stop a minute here. This goes back to the word choroid. We're going to go back in derivation here. Choroid. The choroid part of your eye, C-H-O-R-O-I-D. The choroid is the layer of tissue that lies between the retina and the sclera, which is the white part of your eye, the choroid. And now we come to choroideremia. CHM is a rare X-linked recessive form of hereditary retinal degeneration that affects roughly 1 in 50,000 males. The disease causes a gradual loss of vision, starting with childhood night blindness, followed by peripheral vision loss, and progressing to loss of central vision later in life. Progression continues throughout the individual's life, but both the rate of change and the degree of visual loss are variable among those affected, even within the same family. Remember, this is a genetic, a hereditary disease that pertains to men. Choroideremia causes the gradual deterioration of the retinal pigment epithelium, the RPE. Choroideremia deteriorates the RPE, and also photoreceptors and the choroid. As of 2019, there is no treatment for choroideremia. However, retinal gene therapy clinical trials have demonstrated a possible treatment. The website, if you're curious, is www.curechm.org. That's C-U-R-E-C-H-M.org. Now, since the choroideremia gene, the CHM gene, is located on the X chromosome, symptoms are seen almost exclusively in men. While there are a few exceptions, female carriers have a noticeable lack of pigmentation in the RPE, and that's the retinal pigment epithelium. So female carriers have a noticeable lack of pigmentation in the RPE, but female characters do not experience any symptoms. Female characters have a 50% chance, I'm sorry, female carriers of the gene have a 50% chance of having either an affected son or a carrier daughter, while a male who has choroideremia will have all carrier daughters and unaffected sons. Even though the disease progression can vary significantly, there are general trends. The first symptom many individuals with choroideremia notice is a significant loss of night vision, which begins in youth. Peripheral vision loss occurs gradually, starting as a ring of vision loss and continuing on to tunnel vision in adulthood. Individuals with choroideremia tend to maintain good visual acuity into their 40s, but eventually lose all sight at some point in the 50 to 70 age range. The most severe visual acuity impairment, and that would mean only being able to count fingers or even worse than that, the most severe impairment did not occur until the seventh decade of life. The study found the mean rate of visual acuity loss to be roughly one row on a Snellen chart. Diagnosis. A diagnosis of choroideremia can be made based on family history, symptoms, and the characteristic appearance of the fundus. Here's another word you might not know. I looked it up to be sure that I knew what I was talking about here. The fundus is actually, it sounds like another word for retina to me, but the official definition is fundus, pertaining to the eye, the interior lining of the eyeball, including the retina. So the sentence read, a diagnosis of choroideremia can be based on family history, symptoms, and the characteristic appearance of the fundus. However, choroideremia shares several clinical features with retinitis pigmentosa, a similar but broader group of retinal degenerative diseases, making a specific diagnosis difficult without genetic testing. Because of this, choroideremia is often as initially misdiagnosed as retinitis pigmentosa. A variety of different genetic testing techniques can be used to make a different diagnosis. Management of this disease, while nothing currently can be done to stop or reverse the retinal deterioration, there are steps that can be taken to slow the rate of vision loss. UV-blocking sunglasses for outdoors, appropriate dietary intake of fresh fruit, and guess what? Of course, leafy green vegetables. You can also add antioxidant vitamin supplements and regular intake of dietary omega-3, a very long-chain fatty acid. All these things are recommended. One study found that a dietary supplement of lutein increases macular pigment levels in patients with choroideremia. Over a long period of time, these elevated levels of pigmentation could, maybe, slow retinal degeneration. Additional interventions that may be needed include surgical correction of retinal detachments and surgical correction of cataracts, low vision services, and counseling to help cope with depression, loss of independence, and anxiety over possible job loss. This is information about choroideremia from Wikipedia. Next, I mentioned that that conference was going to be here June 24th to the 27th in Rochester, New York. I went to the website of the group that's coming here, the Choroideremia Research Foundation. They said, they answered the question, what is choroideremia? Choroideremia, or CHM, is a rare inherited disorder that causes progressive vision loss, ultimately leading to complete blindness. Symptoms and incidence. The first symptom is generally night blindness, followed by vision loss in the mid-periphery. These quote-unquote blind spots appear in an irregular ring, only leaving patches of peripheral vision, while central vision is still maintained. Over time, the peripheral vision loss extends in both directions, leading to tunnel vision, and eventually to complete loss of sight. Loss of acuity, depth perception, color perception, and an increase in the severity of night blindness may also occur during this progression. Both the rate of change and the degree of visual loss are variable among those affected, even within the same family. The disease affects the retina, which is the area at the back of the eye. CHM is considered a rare disease because it only affects an estimated 1 in 50,000 individuals. And as you learned in the other article, they're mostly men that get this. So next we come to a paragraph about inheritance. Choroideremia is genetically passed through families by an X-linked pattern of inheritance. In this type of inheritance, the gene for choroideremia is located on the X chromosome. Females have two X chromosomes, but generally only one of the X chromosomes will carry the defective gene. Because females have a healthy version of the gene on their other X chromosome that produces REP1, they normally do not suffer the full effects of CHM. In many cases, female carriers suffer mild symptoms of CHM later in life, such as night blindness and glare sensitivity. In rare cases, female carriers even suffer the full effects of CHM. Males have only one X chromosome paired with one Y chromosome and are therefore genetically susceptible to inherit X-linked diseases. Males cannot be carriers of X-linked diseases, but they will pass the gene on their X chromosomes to their daughters, who then become carriers. Affected males never pass an X-linked disease gene to their sons because fathers pass only the Y chromosome to their sons. Female carriers have a 50% chance, or one chance in two, of passing the X-linked disease gene to their daughters, who as a result will become carriers, and they also will have a 50% chance of passing the gene on to their sons, who would then acquire the disease. Complicated, this genetic-related disease. So the cause and treatment, the choroideremia gene product is called REP1, and this is another name for the Rab Escort Protein 1. This protein functions to bring other small proteins, think of them as signals, into association with an enzyme that adds 20 carbon long chains to the small signals. These signal proteins can then fit into the lipid membrane that surrounds the cell. The small signals are thought to play a role in allowing nutrients to pass across cells. Imagine, if you will, that this process occurs constantly at the back of the eye, as special nutrients are required to keep the biochemical pathways of vision operating at capacity while our eyes are open. Apparently, there's another protein called REP2 in all cells that allow normal cell function if REP1 is not present. Scientists suggest that the amount of REP2 may not be sufficient to allow the normal cell processes to occur in some cells, such as those of the eye. Unfortunately, the male patient with choroideremia makes a defective REP1 protein that is rapidly lost from the eye, and REP2 is not able to replace its function. You recall that the gene is on the X chromosome. Males only have one X chromosome, and so only one copy of the gene that makes the protein. If the gene copy is changed, there is no other normal copy around to mask the effect of not having the normal protein available. Research is trying hard to find ways of getting the cells into the eye to make the normal protein. But at this time, there is no treatment or cure for this disease. However, what we do have is hope. And that brings us to this conference for the Choroideremia Research Foundation, June 24th to 27th, going to be held in Rochester, New York. Stay tuned for more information on that. The website for the foundation is www.curechm.org. Now we've got a quick list of five common retinal diseases to round out the program time today. This comes from www.eyecarespecialist.com, which is a large eye care practice in the area of Scranton, Pennsylvania. Five common retinal diseases. As you know, the retina is the light-sensing tissue that resides in the back of the eye. Other issues can occur. Some of the more common and serious ones that people can experience. They claim that floaters are a common retinal disease. They can be age-related, but they can also occur in cases of severe nearsightedness. Floaters can also be the result of a torn retina. If the tear isn't repaired, it can lead to a retinal detachment. Also, they mentioned common retinal disease, macular degeneration, age-related condition that causes a loss of central vision. You also have diabetic eye disease. We heard lots about this earlier in the program. This is diabetic retinopathy. Another one, retinal detachment. Retinal detachment can occur when too much fluid accumulates behind the retina, causing the retina to separate. Also, we mentioned just moments ago, the presence of floaters can indicate that a retinal detachment might be occurring. The last one, retinitis pigmentosa. This is a genetic condition that can cause retinal degeneration. Vision loss gradually declines as the rods and the cones die. Leber congenital amaurosis, Usher syndrome, Bardell-Biedl syndrome, rod-cone disease, and Refsum disease are some examples of conditions that may be classified as retinitis pigmentosa. Well, that sounds like we got to do another program on just retinitis pigmentosa. So a summary for today's program, you have heard lots of information about diabetic retinopathy and about choroideremia, both potentially devastating retinal eye diseases. I hope this information is useful to you. I have a quote to end with. I am convinced that knowledge is power to overcome the present, to change your own situation, to fight new obstacles, to make better decisions. This is a quote from Ben Carson. He's an American politician, author, and former neurosurgeon who is now serving as the United States Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week. You've been listening to Enabled, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. Our technical director is Maureen Rich, and I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates and information and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, wxxi.org.